Welcome to Durst Notes on Divorce Law with Robert J. Durst, shareholder and chair of Stark & Stark's Divorce Law Group. The Durst Notes podcast series is designed to give you an overview of the several most common areas of divorce law, enabling you to better understand your divorce and the law.
Hello, my name is Robert J. Durst. I'm a shareholder in the law firm of Stark & Stark, and this is the sixth installment of Durst Notes on Divorce Law. Today, we will attempt to discuss equitable distribution. Equitable distribution is the division of the marital assets and liabilities at the time of the divorce. I said that we will attempt to discuss it. That is because the subject of equitable distribution is very long, very deep, and very broad. There are any number of variables that can occur with regard to specific assets. However, I'll try to give you a general outline as to how the process proceeds and how we develop an equitable distribution format. The equitable distribution of the marital assets is fundamentally a three-step process. First, the assets and liabilities acquired during the marriage must be identified. You must do something as simple as a balance sheet showing the assets and liabilities. Second, the assets and liabilities must be evaluated. Sometimes that's a very easy task. We just look at the account statements or the balance sheets for the accounts, and that gives us the value. In other instances, we need appraisers or even the utilization of a forensic accountant. And finally, the third step is to determine how the assets are to be divided and each party's respective percentages. Unlike several states, most notably California, neither New Jersey nor Pennsylvania are community property states. In community property states, the assets and liabilities are divided equally regardless of any other circumstances. New Jersey and Pennsylvania are equitable distribution states, meaning that the assets and liabilities acquired during the marriage must be equitably distributed. What is equitable under the facts and circumstances is not simply a subjective determination. If it were, almost every party would argue that equitable means they should receive all of the assets and the other party should receive none. They would argue that because of their perceptions as to why the marriage ended, their perceptions as to their own work efforts or the lack of work efforts of their spouse, or a general sense of being victimized by the divorce, justifies that they receive a higher percentage of the assets. Those are not, however, factors that the court considers. In fact, they are largely irrelevant, and there are specific statutory factors that must be considered. Those factors include the length of the marriage, the age of the parties, the health of the parties, the standard of living established during the marriage, the earning capacities of the parties' educational background, training, and employment skills, the parties' respective responsibilities for the custody and care of the children, the contribution of either party to the education, training, or career of the other, the tax consequences of the proposed distribution, and the value of the asset. You should familiarize yourself with these and all of the statutory factors. You need to call your attorney's attention to any facts or circumstances of your marriage that you feel relate to any of the factors. If your case is ultimately to be decided by a judge, the judge's decision must include a specific analysis of each factor and its relevancy to the facts of your case. Therefore, in order to have some understanding as to what a judge may decide, and therefore what may be a fair settlement, you must analyze your case in the context of these factors so that you can project what a judge may do if he or she hears the case. Otherwise, your projection of what is equitable may bear no relationship to the judge's finding, and your settlement proposals will be equally irrelevant and meaningless. It is also important to consider that not all assets must be divided in the same percentage. It is entirely possible that some assets would be divided equally, while others may not be divided equally. For example, it is not unusual that the value of a small business or a professional practice may not be divided equally between the parties. The person operating the business or engaging in the professional practice may receive a higher percentage of the value. There are assets which may not be subject to equitable distribution and which will be retained by one of the parties and not shared with the other. Assets which are received by way of gift from a third party, have been inherited, or assets which you owned prior to the marriage generally will remain your property and will not be divided with your spouse. However, there are very important issues regarding such assets. Those issues generally revolve around an increase or decrease in their value during the marriage. The law says that if the asset has increased in value, that increase in value itself may be a separate asset which is subject to equitable distribution. If the increase in value is the result of the work efforts or financial investment of one or both of the parties, it will generally be subject to equitable distribution. For example, if one of the parties owned a home at the time of the marriage, and the home was renovated, remodeled, or improved by either the party's work efforts or the financial investment of the parties during the marriage, the increase in value will likely be subject to equitable distribution. On the other hand, if nothing was done to the property and it increased in value solely as a result of market conditions, the increase in value may not be subject to equitable distribution. The same is true of inherited or gifted assets. Care has to be taken to review each asset to see if it was placed in joint names after it was inherited, gifted, or even was owned prior to the marriage. If it was placed into joint names or sold, transferred into cash, and then the cash used to buy an asset which was placed in joint names, the otherwise exempt asset may lose its exempt status and be deemed to have been converted into an asset subject to equitable distribution. It is literally impossible to discuss all of the alternatives which may exist regarding prior-owned, gifted, or inherited assets and the increase or decrease in their values. The point to be made, however, is that you must inform your attorney as to the existence of such assets and analyze with them whether or not the asset is increased in value, and if so, why. In terms of valuing the assets themselves, some assets, as I said before, are very simple to value. You simply look at the statement, and the value is what the statement says is in the account. Others are much more complex, and the majority are somewhere between the simple and the complex. Small businesses and professional practices are particularly difficult to evaluate. Their value can generally only be determined by the opinion of a competent forensic accountant. The accountant will examine the financial statements, income tax returns, the nature of the business, the history of the business, and even try to project a future for the business, and will then offer an expert opinion as to its value. Other assets may not be as difficult or complex as a small business, or a professional practice, but they will require expert opinions. For example, objects of art, automobiles, collector's automobiles that have been customized or are collector's items may be subject to expert opinions. Collections such as coins, stamps, baseball cards, or any variety of other assets which do not have a defined market value may need to be appraised. Very often, unnecessary funds are spent on appraising houses. I say unnecessary because in many cases the house is going to be sold, and therefore the value is what the marketplace says it's worth and what it is sold for. On the other hand, if the home is going to be retained by one of the parties, then a competent appraisal has to be obtained. Again, as with the increase or decrease in the value of inherited, pre-owned, or gifted assets, it is impossible to discuss all of the alternatives regarding the valuation of assets. What is important, however, is that you know and you understand that you are entitled to have at least a reasonable opinion and a good faith estimate as to the value of the assets before you settle your case.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's installment of the Divorce Law Podcast, and be sure to join us next week for another informative discussion with Robert Durst. Stark & Stark is a full-service law firm with offices throughout New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York. For more information on the services the firm provides, visit us online at stark-stark.com.